So tell me a little bit about, we know that there are some issues, some regulatory issues. Tell me a little bit about your involvement with that.
Well, I have the very first case involving the use of commercial drones in the United States. It involves a penalty that the FAA attempted to impose upon someone who was using a drone for a commercial purpose. And we successfully, thus far, defended against the penalty on the basis that there is no existing regulation concerning the use of this kind of device.
Now, is this just located, is this a local incident, or is this going to become something that will work nationwide?
Well, the case involved a flight in Virginia, but the case is pending before the National Transportation Safety Board, so it's of national significance.
So tell me a little bit about how you were able to be successful in your case.
Well, if you go all the way back to the beginning of what I used to call model aviation, people flying model aircraft, there never were any rules or regulations concerning that. The rules that exist really pertain to manned aircraft, people flying inside airplanes, where there's always somebody's life in danger who's on board the aircraft. And for decades, the FAA never had any interest in regulating or policing the use of model aircraft. Until 2007, when they came up with a policy statement which said that you can't use model aircraft for commercial purposes, even though people had already been doing that for many years, including in the filmmaking industry. So when Raphael Perker, who's my client, was flying at the University of Virginia for what they say is a commercial purpose to make a TV commercial, and they objected to the way in which he flew, namely close to buildings and close to people, they attempted to impose a penalty. And our defense was basically there's no regulation that governs the operation of a model airplane. We're talking about a 5-pound styrofoam airplane with a camera on front. It didn't hurt anyone. It didn't hit any buildings. It was a completely successful flight. Nonetheless, they attempted to impose a $10,000 penalty on Mr. Perker on the basis that his flying was too aggressive, too close to the ground. And so we defended. I think the premise there is that when you create new regulations concerning new technologies, it has to be through the formal process that's required of federal agencies.
Does the defense of, well, I just didn't know I was doing something wrong work in this situation, or do we really need regulation from the FAA concerning, you know, what we're looking at for all the cornfields and stuff here?
Well, it's an interesting question as to what we might need. I think for most of the value in this technology, even today and especially in the future, is going to be very lightweight, low-altitude systems, small helicopters or airplanes that weigh only a few pounds. And there's a really good question about how much regulation do you need when all you're doing is flying over the cornfields, taking some pictures or some sensor readings. Particularly if the drone is in line of sight of you, just like a hobbyist model aircraft. I think arguably there really is very little regulation required to do that safely and to avoid threatening either other aircraft in the air or people on the ground. So I think what we need is a proportionate regulation scheme that recognizes that something that weighs 2 pounds is not as much of a threat to anyone, especially if no one's on board, compared to a manned aircraft that has thousands of pounds of metal and fuel and flies hundreds of miles an hour. It's just a very different kind of safety profile. So that I hope that the regulations take that into account in the future.
So they've asked you to come here and speak to a bunch of farmers from the Midwest kind of about your case and some other things. Tell me a little bit about your presentation today.
Well, it's funny. I actually spent some time living in the Midwest when I was younger, and my very first experience with model aircraft and my very first plane actually ended up malfunctioning after the end of the summer and crashing into a field of canola. So I actually have intimate connection between agriculture and drones. But the real what I want to present today is both an explanation of the case that I've handled, some of the issues surrounding it, and also a discussion about airspace rights, who owns the air above private property. I think that's a legal issue that the country has not really revisited since the 1920s, when we worked out how we were going to deal legally with manned aircraft and how we would allow them to fly across or over private property. And here we are in a situation where we have a new technology where a lot of the flying is going to be low to the ground, and there are legal issues that are raised with respect to that kind of operation that I think are different from the way many people were thinking about this. And it plays into the whole regulatory question, you know, who can or should regulate it? What rights do you have to exclude drones from the skies over your property? And things that I think would be of interest to the landowners here.
So tell me a little bit about that. What are the difference, you know, for a manned aircraft versus an unmanned and that private property? Because it seems to be a conversation anyway with ATVs and whatnot as we go. But now this is something a little bit different.
Well, if you go all the way back to the beginning of the country, you'll find that originally a landowner was said to own and control airspace all the way up to the heavens. And that's a legal doctrine that was in conflict with the advent of the airplane, where people obviously wanted to, and there was good reason to fly people across the country. And so working that out required a compromise where people now have a right of transit across what's called navigable airspace, which is defined as 500 feet and above. So if someone is flying over your field at 500 feet and above, you really have no legal recourse anymore. It's not a trespass. It's considered navigable airspace. That was settled in the 1926 Air Commerce Act. However, if they're below that altitude, it's an interesting question. And it's a question that the Supreme Court has actually addressed in a 1946 case in which the court expressly said that private landowners own and control the airspace immediately surrounding their private property. So, I think you have the thought process that should occur, and I'm not suggesting an outcome here or advising anyone, but I think there's certainly thought that needs to be given to what rights a landowner has over the immediate airspace. So if the intent is to fly a camera using propulsive forces 20 feet above the cornfields, there's an argument that that's private airspace and is not necessarily placed into the jurisdiction of the FAA to regulate. But it's really not. That's a question that hasn't been grappled with, because for all these decades we've only been concerned about navigable airspace, getting to A from A to B using a manned aircraft. And in order to do that, you have to, by regulation, fly at least 500 feet above the ground in most areas of the country, and some places even 1,000 feet. So you're talking about what happens to the legal rights of both people on the ground and people flying these devices when you are at low altitudes.
One other question that kind of comes to mind is, there seems to be, the FAA is supposed to be giving us some sort of direction and some sort of regulation, and it's almost like they're dragging their feet a little bit, or maybe they can't really figure it out. What needs to happen to make any of this process happen, and what do we tell folks that are wanting to fly drones now?
The FAA has been working on the new regulations for unmanned aircraft systems for almost a decade. This was this is not a new issue. It may be new to certain industries, but with the use of the larger military platforms overseas in the wars, people realized that there would be useful applications here in the U.S., especially in law enforcement and border patrol and fire search and rescue, things like that, really government functions. What's happened, though, is that the technology has changed. Now we're talking about very small, lightweight devices that really anyone can operate quite safely, and that may not need the same kind of regulation as these larger high-altitude systems that were on the table 10 years ago. And so I think the agency has struggled to come up with what the regulatory framework should be for all of these systems, because every time they work on it, the technology changes. And it's just a very conservative agency to begin with. Think about, I just got off the plane, and think about how long it took the agency to relax the rule for in-flight use of electronic devices. Used to be you couldn't do that at all. And now they're offering me, for $5 a flight, I can buy Wi-Fi. I can actually transmit on board an aircraft. It took decades for the agency to come around on that regulation, even though there are studies all the way back in the 80s that said that there was no harmful interference with the aircraft navigation systems. So it's a conservative, slow-moving agency to begin with, and this is a new, rapidly evolving technology, and I think those two things have caused a lot of difficulties. With respect to your question about what people can do now, that, you know, that gets into the sort of legal advice and what I, you know, that's something I can't really tell people what to do or not do, but certainly I think that whenever there's a technology that people want and can use in their business, there's a role for advocacy, for being a proponent of the use of the technology, for not, you know, for standing up and saying we don't want this technology to be so regulated and so burdensome to use that I need a pilot with a license, I need a certified system that's going to cost $50,000, and basically put the technology out of the reach of small farmers and even the larger ones to make it cost prohibitive. So if you go from, you know, taking photographs from the air in a manned aircraft, if it's going to cost you about the same to do unmanned, then you haven't really moved the ball forward on technology and progress. So when the opportunities arise to comment on proposed regulations, which are expected to be issued this fall, that'll be an opportunity for interested people to get involved and talk to the federal government and say, look, this seems very onerous and burdensome and perhaps more than we need, especially if we're talking about low-weight, low-altitude systems.
Well, I think it's all very fascinating and ever-evolving, and, you know, as government works, not always as fast as technology. We've kind of always known that. So I really appreciate your time. I know folks are anxious to hear what you have to say today, so thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.